Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I'm an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as usual, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Hot town, summer in the city, back of my neck getting dirty and gritty.
That was an interesting choice for this episode.
A little loving spoonful for you guys out there.
All right, then.
We actually have a little bit of business to get to before we jump right into the topic, and that is some listener mail. This listener mail comes from Ted, and Ted says, I'm a regular listener of the podcast, and it's been great to listen to on my commute to and from my co-op this summer. I'd like to hear about how air conditioning HVAC units work. We design and build them, among other things, at my co-op company, and after helping to put one together and test it, I'm still not clear on how it works. I would also appreciate an episode about how capacitors work in circuits as a supplement to the article on the How Stuff Works site. Lastly, could you talk about Google Plus as well as Windows 8? Thanks a lot. Keep up the good work and good jokes. Ted. Well, Ted, we're going to talk about air conditioners today, but stick around because right after we record this, we're recording our episode about Google Plus.
Yeah, because, you know, a couple people have asked for that.
Yeah.
And by a couple, I mean, you know, dozen.
And I plan on scheduling the Google Plus episode to publish immediately after this one. So if this published on a Monday, look for it on Wednesday. If it published on Wednesday, look for it next Monday.
All right, then.
Because I don't have the calendar in front of me. But we're going to talk about air conditioning units. We're not actually going to talk about HVAC units today. We're just going to talk about air conditioners.
Yeah, because there's a bit to them.
Yeah, there's a bit to them. And it's also, we in Atlanta right now are in the middle of a pretty nasty heat wave. It actually kind of broke a little bit. We have a little bit of a break in it right now.
It's today.
Yeah, it's only in the upper 80s with a heat index in the mid 90s today.
Yeah.
But recently we had a heat index over 107 degrees and really high humidity. So in Atlanta, that was pretty miserable. And a lot of the United States has been going through the same thing. This is, of course, the summer of 2011 for all of you people who are from the future. So we thought, you know what? We really appreciate air conditioning. So let's talk about how air conditioners work.
Yeah, I actually am very grateful for the air conditioning, especially this last week, but, The answer to the question, though, how air conditioners work is sort of it's not an easy one because there are different kinds of air conditioning.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all based on heat exchange, but the method of heat exchange differs from one to the other. Although I would say the majority of them use the refrigerant method of heat exchange where you're compressing a liquid and then you are allowing it to boil off. That's a pretty complex issue. Did you want to talk about the other types really quickly, or should I just launch into a science lesson?
Well, I think it might be a good idea to go ahead and talk about the type of air conditioning that most of us use and
Sure. Then
maybe look at some of the others. I do want to mention a name that is familiar to a lot of us, at least here in the United States.
Uh-huh.
That would be Willis Carrier.
Yes.
You might say, yeah, I don't know who that is. You're like, oh, wait, Carrier made air conditioners.
Yes.
Well, this was in the early 20th century, so really the modern electrical air conditioner, of course, electricity not being that prevalent until, the late 1800s, early 1900s. Carrier lived in Buffalo, New York, in the United States, and he came up with the idea of the dew point control, which is an air conditioning system that basically had to do with the saturation of cooled air and which, you know, loses moisture through condensation. And that's your science lesson, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to have to talk about the relationship between pressure, temperature, liquids, gases.
Okay.
It's important to understand this basic level of science in order to really get a grip on what an air conditioner is doing.
I agree.
Because otherwise I could talk about what an air conditioner is doing, but you would say, well, why does that work? I know how it works, but why does it work?
Yeah. We do have an article on the site about that.
Yes.
Of course.
Yeah. Actually, we have a great article on how air conditioners work. And that one was written by Marshall Brain, who is the founder of HowStuffWorks.com. So it's one of our flagship articles. If you really want to see some good animations and illustrations about it, I recommend checking that out. But we're going to talk first about, well, some basic matter.
Okay.
So we know that matter is made up of teeny tiny particles.
Yes.
You know, atoms and molecules, mm-hmm. right? So with solids, these particles they're not really truly stationary. Okay. These particles are always moving, but in solids, they're not moving a lot.
Right. Yeah. They're packed closely together.
Yeah. They're very, very dense. And, that's why we think of them as solid. In liquids, not that dense. In liquids, these particles are allowed to move around, and they move around in a more or less random fashion. For all we know, it could be a very orderly fashion, but it's so orderly. It's like such a complex system that we're unable to understand it. So to us, we might as well say random.
Yeah. Well, there's one molecule on the side going, okay, keep in the line, stay in the line.
Yeah. If you look really closely, you'll see one with those little cones that the air trap, you know, the people on the tarmac use, and they're like, all right, coming in, go to the left.
It's very hard to hold those with your electrons.
Yeah, it is.
In your outer shell.
That's why you hardly ever see them. Also, it's impossible to know where they are at any one time because of the uncertainty principle. Wow. We're getting really kind of crazy with our humor today. So anyway, all right, let's get serious. So in liquid, these particles move around more or less randomly.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these particles are moving around with enough energy to break free of the surface of that liquid.
Right.
So mm-hmm. they will actually become a particle that is in a vapor above that liquid.
Right.
All right.
Like water that evaporates and turns into water vapor.
Sort of.
But
more like water that's boiling off. But yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So
I was trying to go for an image that people could.
Yes. Yes. Very much. Very much so. So the way you would get one of these particles to do that, to get enough energy to break free, is you have to add energy into the system.
Right.
Right. So when you add energy into the system, these particles get more, they get more energy, they start moving around more, and then they may have enough energy to break free from the surface. So if you add heat, that's a form of energy.
Yeah, like the boiling water.
Right. So if you start adding heat to a liquid, more of these particles will gain energy and be able to escape the surface of that liquid. If you get enough vapor so that it actually equals the atmospheric pressure that's on top of that liquid, that's when you hit the boiling point.
Okay.
All right. So let's say you've got a pot of water at sea level.
Okay.
All right. Now, boiling temperature for a pot of water at sea level is 212 degrees. Now, what that means is that when the water reaches 212 degrees, the particles in that water have enough energy to escape the surface of the water, and the vapor pressure is equal to atmospheric pressure. The water will boil, and the water will not get any warmer than 212 degrees. You could have that fire pumped up as high as it's going to go. But the water temperature will be 212 degrees as it's boiling off. Now, once all the water's boiled off, if you have a thermometer in that pot, the thermometer is going to skyrocket, you know, mm-hmm. at that point. But the temperature of the water itself will remain 212 because it's actually converting from liquid into gas. So that boiling point is important to remember. It's when, like I said, when the pressure of that vapor has equaled the atmospheric pressure of the environment around it. So if you change the atmospheric pressure around that liquid, you change the boiling point.
Mm-hmm.
So if the pressure is, if there's less pressure than it would be at sea level, then it's going to take a lower temperature to make that water boil.
Okay.
If there is more pressure than there is at sea level, then it's going to take a higher temperature to make that water boil.
Right.
All right, so let's say that we have put a lid on top of that pot. Okay, by putting the lid on top of that pot, we have decreased the air pressure or the atmospheric pressure on that liquid, so the water will boil faster.
All right.
If you take the lid off, then you have just increased the atmospheric pressure because now more air is actually pressing down on that liquid. It's going to actually increase the boiling point to its normal boiling point at that particular environment. So now we've talked about how you have increased pressure, you've increased the temperature of the boiling point. Now that's the basics for what we're going to talk about with air conditioners. Because air conditioners are, at least the typical ones you find in houses and buildings, use pressure to create a pressurized liquid that then turns into a depressurized gas, and it's a closed loop system. And the liquid in this case is a refrigerant.
Right.
So it tends to be some sort of material that has a boiling point that is pretty low. Like it doesn't, it's not a very high temperature. In other words, in normal conditions, normal being like in everyday atmospheric conditions, that would be a gas.
Right. Uh-huh.
So in the, one of the common ones we talk about is Freon, which at this point is more or less a generic term, kind of like Xerox or Kleenex would, you know, those companies would argue they are not generic terms.
But, yes. They would argue, their lawyers would argue that,
yes,
certainly.
But,
People use them,
right? Right. So, like, say, I'm going to Xerox this. You're making a copy, or I'm going to Google this. In that case, you may be actually using Google, or you may just be using some search engine. Kind of the same thing when people talk about Freon, unless they're talking about the specific refrigerant, it's more or less just refrigerants in general.
Yeah. Based on my experience recently, I haven't seen the actual product Freon in quite some time. I think for concerns of CFCs.
Right, chlorofluorocarbons.
Yes. So I think that these days, I don't think Freon is used very much, if at all, at least not in the United States. Of course, I could be wrong, but there are other refrigerants too, so, you know.
Right. So what an air
conditioner... Your mileage may vary.
Yeah. What an air conditioner does is it pressurizes this refrigerant in one section. Think of the... air conditioner as a closed loop system that has a low pressure section and a high pressure section.
Yep.
All right. The guardians of this, you know, the two elements that separate the low pressure from the high pressure, mm-hmm, are a compressor on one end of the loop and a valve on the other end of the loop, an expansion valve, mm-hmm, on the other end of the loop. These two act as the gateway that keep the pressure high on one side and low on the other.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yep. So, and it's hot on one side and cool on the other.
Yes, exactly. Because as we pressurize the refrigerant, the temperature of that refrigerant goes up.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So the refrigerant normally at room temperature would be a gas.
Mm-hmm.
You use the compressor to compress this gas to a point where it's very, very dense. And then you run it through a series of coils,
mm-hmm,
that allow this high temperature pressurized gas to give off a lot of heat.
Right.
The heat escapes into the ambient, the environmental atmosphere. So what the atmosphere has to be of a cooler temperature than the pressurized gas, right?
Yeah.
In order for heat to transfer, it has to go from high heat to low heat. You can't have something go low heat to high heat. So in other words, if I were to turn on my air conditioner and I happen to be in an incredibly hot environment. Let's say that, for argument's sake, it's 160 degrees outside, and my pressurized refrigerant only gets up to a temperature of 140 degrees, that air conditioner is not going to work,
mm-hmm,
because you are not going to have any heat exchange from the actually, you'll have the wrong sort of heat exchange, but you're not going to have any heat released from the refrigerant into the atmosphere because the atmosphere is actually warmer than the refrigerant, even at its pressurized state.
Okay.
All right. So you've got these coils that this heated gas, this compressed heated gas, is moving through.
Mm-hmm.
As it moves through the coils and starts to release heat into the atmosphere, that means the gas cools. Well, as gas cools, it condenses.
Right, right.
And this is the process where a gas converts back into a liquid. Now, it's going to be at a liquid at a higher temperature than it normally would be because it's under pressure. You know, mm-hmm, we talked about that. The higher the pressure, the higher the boiling point. So once you get that temperature down below the boiling point of that pressurized substance, it condenses into a liquid.
Mm-hmm.
This is how we get things like liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen, liquid nitrogen. You compress these gases to a very compressed state,
mm-hmm,
and it condenses into a liquid. And as long as you keep it under pressure, it will stay a liquid. If you release that pressure, then it immediately starts to boil off and convert into a gas.
Right.
Well, that's the secret. That's the secret of the valve at the end of this loop, the expansion valve, because once the pressurized gas gets to the expansion valve, that's what allows it to move into the low pressure system, and it immediately begins to boil off and essentially starts absorbing heat from the environment. Just as it was releasing heat when it was going through the condenser coils, now it's absorbing heat, which, mm-hmm, means that the surrounding air loses heat. It transfers the heat from the air into this boiling liquid that's becoming gas very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And then the surrounding air is cooled. That's the basis of an air conditioner.
Yes.
We can actually walk through those phases and go into more detail now, but that's basically how it works. It's all about, really, you have two closed systems. You have the closed system of the refrigerant.
Uh-huh.
And then you have the closed system of the air inside whatever it is you're cooling.
Right.
Because you're not pulling air in from the outside environment and then cooling it and then pushing it into the building. You're recycling the air that's inside the building, and it's cooling it through the by this heat exchange method.
Right. Mm-hmm. And just a little bit of HVAC. Some systems can reverse
this process,
the way that it works, and that's called a heat pump. I have one of those on my house, as a matter of fact. Which is very convenient.
Right. In that case, you're doing the same system, except you're reversing the process, essentially. You are
recycling the warm air inside your house.
Right.
And it's warming it instead of cooling it.
Yeah, yeah.
And ejecting the cooler air outside from the process that actually takes place in the unit itself outside.
Right.
Because if you've ever been outside and next to an air conditioner, you felt, you know, it blows hot air outside, so... You know, but that's not coming from inside the house. That is the result of the process.
Right.
And the exchange of heat. Now, Carrier actually came up with a system for buildings. He installed one in 1922 at Grauman's Metropolitan Theater in L.A.
Ah, man's Chinese theater.
Yes.
I've been there. Saw The Matrix sequel. It was terrible. Theater was great.
Yes, because the
movie was terrible.
Yeah, and at that point, air conditioning... was used to feed air or take air in the ceiling and put it out at the floor level, which would be, you know, useful because the hotter air would be toward the top of the room.
Right.
And the first fully air conditioned office building, according to Britannica, was the Milam building, or Milam, I don't know. It's like M-I-L-A-M in San Antonio in the United States. And that was built in the late 1920s.
Mm-hmm.
So again, you know, this hasn't been forever and ever, but there, you know, it's certainly something that we use in a lot of the buildings, here down south, especially in the United States. But there are many, many other types of air conditioning that have been going on for years. Do you want to get into those yet, or do you want to go back and get more into the process first?
Let me get more into the process of the typical air conditioner, because, this is what's going to apply, I think, to the majority of our listeners who have air conditioning.
Groovy.
So, and then we can talk about the other kinds, including my favorite, the swamp cooler. But we'll get into that. So let's break this down further about the parts of an air conditioner. So you've got – usually, typically, you have an electric motor.
Yeah.
And the electric motor turns a piston. This is a very simple compressor. This is like the simplest form of a compressor. So. Mm-hmm. Not all air conditioner compressors are like this, but this demonstrates the principle. You would call this a piston compressor or a reciprocating compressor. So imagine that you have a chamber, all right? So a cylinder, let's say. And inside the cylinder, you have a piston that can move up and down the chamber, which is sealed. And the electric motor makes the piston go up and down. Now, at the bottom of this chamber, you have two valves.
Okay.
You have an intake or suction valve that will only allow fluid to flow into the chamber.
Uh-huh.
Through, and that's coming in from the low pressure side of this air conditioner system. So it's pulling the refrigerant gas into the chamber.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side, you have the outtake or the discharge valve. Just trying to think of the right word for it. Discharge valve would be the right word.
Okay.
So now this valve only allows fluid to pass out of the chamber. This pushes it into the high pressure side of the air conditioning system.
Yeah.
So you're pulling from the low pressure, pushing into the high pressure. And both of these valves are essentially spring loaded. Okay. So there's a certain amount of pressure or a certain amount of force that's created by the spring.
Yeah.
That the system has to overcome in order for the valves to open in either, you know, case. So you've got the piston down at the bottom of this chamber. So it's down against where the valves are.
Okay.
Right? The piston starts to pull up. All right. This creates an area of low pressure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which creates suction.
Yes.
Now, once that force of suction is strong enough to overcome the spring force of the intake valve, that valve will open.
Okay.
All right. So you're pulling hard enough to overcome the force of that spring. The valve opens and that pulls the Freon gas into that chamber.
Okay.
All right. Once the piston gets to the top, it stops for a moment. That allows the spring to close on the intake valve. It is now, there's no more fluid coming into the chamber and the valve itself is closed.
Okay.
The piston then starts to move down.
Right.
This starts to compress the gas inside the chamber. Eventually, it starts to increase the pressure. Eventually, that pressure is going to be strong enough to open up the discharge valve.
Mm-hmm.
The discharge valve opens, and that means that the Freon gets pushed into the high-pressure system. You might ask, well, why is that high pressure on that system? It's because at the end of that side of the air conditioner system is that expansion valve. All right? The expansion valve is sort of a bottleneck point.
Mm-hmm.
And because you keep pressing more and more gas into that side and the expansion valve only allows a little bit of that gas to escape at a time,
mm-hmm.
the pressure increases.
Right.
All right. Actually, and at that point, it's not really gas, it's liquid, but we'll get there. So you've got the piston moving and it's moving at an incredible speed. We're talking like 1,000 RPM.
Mm-hmm.
So 1,000 repetitions per minute. So when I'm talking about this process of the piston coming up, pausing and coming back down, it's doing that multiple times a second, something like between 17 and 20 times a second.
Mm-hmm.
So you're pulling that Freon or other refrigerant through the low pressure system into that chamber, into the high pressure system. This gas, once it gets pressurized this way, the temperature starts to climb.
Mm-hmm.
So now the temperature of the Freon has increased. That's when it starts to move through the condenser coils.
Right.
And that's when it starts to release heat to the environment. Now, it may release the heat directly to the environment. This is why if you were ever to look at an air conditioner outside and you see this series of little tubes that are kind of crisscrossing or wiggling back and forth across a large surface area, those are the condenser coils.
I think of them as metal intestines.
There you go. Do not touch those.
No.
They are hot. And the reason they are hot is because they're releasing heat into that. Into the atmosphere. If this didn't work, then air conditioners wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So the heat starts to pull off into the atmosphere. Meanwhile, the gas inside those tubes, that temperature starts to decrease because it's shedding the heat off into the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
The gas starts to condense into a liquid. Now, the liquid, by the time it gets to the expansion valve at the end, has reached sort of a moderate temperature.
Mm-hmm.
It's no longer as warm or as hot as the gas was in the first part of this condenser coil series.
Right.
Now the expansion valve will only allow, like I said, a small amount of fluid through at a time. And that's what's allowing this pressure to build behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Once the liquid goes through and it enters the low pressure system, that it immediately starts to boil. So it immediately begins to convert into a gas that ends up absorbing the heat from the air. And what you have is a fan right at that section of the air conditioner
mm-hmm.
that blows this now cooled air into the building or room or whatever.
Okay.
So the fan provides the air movement so that this cold air can make its way through the building and cool the entire environment.
Yeah. Without that ability, it would be semi-useless. I mean, it would be cooling
the immediate
environment.
In one section. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So you also have an intake for to pull air from the building so that it can be cooled in this section,
mm-hmm.
right? So you've got intakes and outtakes. You've got the vents that are pulling air in, and you've got the vents that are pushing air out. And depending on a lot of houses I've seen have the intake vents in the floor,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's pulling the warm air, or it's pulling air. It's putting cold air at the top to filter down into the house, and then it's pulling air from the bottom in order to cool it through the system.
Right. Well, I mean, if you've ever stood right in front of an air conditioner vent inside your house, you know that it can be quite cold.
Right.
And it's even colder, and I don't mean to say that it would be completely useless without fans, because my grandmother's house had a window-mounted air conditioning
uh-huh.
unit. Of course, that one worked just fine, but it wasn't circulating air through the house's vents. It actually was, sitting there in the window and working. And let me tell you, standing in front of that thing, it is a real blast of very cold air. It's kind of, it's actually uncomfortably cold. And that's one of the reasons why you would want the air to filter down in the room like that, is to sort of diffuse it with the air otherwise in the room and sort of make it a nice, comfortable temperature.
Yeah, normalized
not a
temperature.
Really a blast of cold air. You know, but that's just, you know, one of those things.
And we also, I guess we need to add in the fact that air conditioners are really useful if you have a thermostat.
Yes.
You don't have to have a thermostat. You can have an air conditioner that's essentially on or off.
Yeah.
But a thermostat, what that'll do is, it's essentially a thermometer set with a switch. So when the thermometer hits a certain level or below, then the switch is turned off and the system is shut down. Mm-hmm. When the temperature creeps up, it activates the switch, turns the whole system on, and the air conditioner kicks on. So that's that little clicking noise you hear is when the temperature, the thermometer inside your thermostat, like you've set it to say 72 degrees, mm-hmm. and it creeps up to 73. That's the thermometer then activates the switch. You hear the clicking noise of the system turning on, and then shortly thereafter, you should hear the fan system blowing, unless of course you have a really super quiet air conditioner, which is awesome. But then you would start to feel the effects of the AC, and it happens pretty quickly. Like I said, this is the piston itself is moving at, you know, an incredible speed. So that's your basic air conditioner. I skipped over a couple little things. Like on the high pressure end, you usually have a receiver tank, a holding tank for liquid refrigerant. That's so once it's been pressurized and condensed, it goes into this tank and then moves from the tank further into the system to eventually get to the valve. And it can get a little more complicated depending upon the nature of the compressor, but that's the basic premise of an air conditioner. Pretty awesome, really.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's an ingenious invention.
So now did you want to talk about some of the alternatives or, you know, different types of air conditioners?
Well, yes. Of course, building air conditioners work, you know, whole buildings. Like we're actually in an office building, a very large office building with multiple floors. And, you know, you'll often see multiple units. Like if you fly over in an airplane, you look at, like a big box, warehouse store or, something like an office building like the one we're in, you'll see multiple air conditioning units on top.
And condenser towers as well.
Yes.
Which,
yes.
You know, a condenser tower, essentially that's just a area that is specifically designated for condenser coils. It's to create more surface area so that you can have a hotter gas pump through those coils, and then the temperature will decrease as it goes, as it releases a heat to the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Remember that the temperature of that refrigerant is going to vary. It's all going to depend upon the type of refrigerant that's being used, because different liquids boil off and at different temperatures.
Right.
And it's also going to depend upon the strength of the compressor, because the more you pressurize that fluid, the higher that temperature is going to be. So if you're using like an industrial strength air conditioner, it's probably going to be compressing that fluid and using a different type of refrigerant that's going to get at a much higher temperature than a home unit would have. Therefore, you need more surface area to release that heat into the atmosphere and condense it into a liquid.
Yeah. What's up, home unit?
There you go.
According to our article on howstuffworks.com, a lot of larger buildings do use a chilled water system.
Yes.
Which basically, you have a problem, see, because if you have all those units on the roof, then what happens to the people on, you know, say a 15-story building? What happens to all those people on the second floor, the third floor? Because that's a long way to go.
Right.
So what they do is, essentially they oversimplification, as I'm wont to do on the show. Basically, they transfer the cooling effect to water, and then the chilled water is pumped through the building. You know, that's just the basics. But apparently it takes water down to between around 40 and 45 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 4.4 and 7.2 degrees Celsius. And it's just, you know, pump the chilled water through, and it goes to those are connected to air handlers.
Again, these are closed systems.
Yeah, and you have to insulate those pipes too, because otherwise the cold water inside the pipes will lose their coolant to, you know, as they travel throughout the building
to
the warmer
air
around.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you can't really do that. But Yeah.
There are also some ice systems where you – essentially what you do is you have an enormous tank on the top of a building. This really works for large buildings, not for houses. But you would have a storage tank that would hold water. You would freeze that water at night when electricity rates are lower, so it's more it's not going to cost as much to actually freeze it. But you freeze that water, and then in the daytime, as the water is you got this big old block of ice, you have fans blow air against the ice, which creates this chilled air, that conditioned air that you can then can circulate either through the building, or you use it again to chill another water line that circulates through the building and thus cools the building. This is a pretty inexpensive way to create air conditioning once you've got the system in place. But putting the system in place is quite expensive indeed, because you're talking about building a pretty enormous tank, and it's not cheap to build. But once it's there, it tends to be less expensive than running a conventional air conditioner.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And of course, down at Turner Field here in Atlanta, which is where the Atlanta Braves baseball team plays, there's a space outside where they spray water.
Yeah.
And the fans can walk through that area. And you get a little damp, but the effect is a cooling effect, because it's, you know, the atomized water feels, it's sort of like sweat, actually.
Yeah,
when it evaporates, makes you feel better. They used to do that in the 19th century textile industry, because they were using it for humidification and cooling purposes, according to Britannica. But in India, a long time ago, they used to hang, wet grass mats over their windows.
Yes.
Basically doing the same thing. It was the evaporating water would cool down the room.
Yeah, it cools down the surrounding air. Because again, in order to evaporate, the water needs energy.
Mm-hmm.
So the water is taking energy from the air around it, the heat from the air around it. And then you have air that has, it's cooler. It's the heat has been transferred to the water. Benjamin Franklin actually looked into this as a way of cooling systems, and, he kind of figured it out as well. And, it's been in use for millennia. I mean, mm-hmm. Ancient Egyptians have been doing this.
Sure.
Ancient Egyptians aren't doing it anymore. They're not doing much of anything other than, hanging out in museums. But anyway, which I do too, but I'm actually a little more lively. Anyway, I'm getting off track again.
Mummy dearest.
Thank you. So this actually brings us to what I had mentioned earlier, the swamp coolers.
Right.
So swamp coolers work on this system, and you might wonder why they're called swamp coolers. Well, it's probably because they can smell a little swampy if you don't maintain them properly. They actually do not work very well in humid environments, and I'll explain why in a minute. The process of a swamp cooler is kind of interesting. Essentially what you're doing is you're pulling warm air from outside.
Mm-hmm.
You're blowing that warm air through a chamber that has usually moist pads in it. So you've got like some sort of padding material that has water. It's soaked with water. The warm air causes the water to evaporate. In that process, the air itself loses some of its heat.
Mm-hmm.
And then a fan blows the cooler air into the environment, into the house or whatever. Now, this is different from an air conditioner in several ways. One of them is, like I said before, an air conditioned system is a closed system, not just from the Freon, but also the air inside the building. If you open up a window or open up a door inside an air conditioned house, you'll hear, like, your mom will yell, "You're letting out all the air conditioning." Well, that's actually true, because what it's doing is it's recycling the air inside that system. So if you open up stuff, you're losing you're causing the air conditioner to work harder,
right,
in order to try and get to the right temperature.
Also, what were you, raised in a barn?
Right. Do you think we're air conditioning the whole neighborhood? So a swamp cooler, though, it's pulling air from outside and pushing it into the environment. So you actually have to have a window or door open,
uh-huh,
in order to have air circulation. Otherwise, you're just pumping air into a house until it explodes.
Right.
That's not entirely true.
Like a balloon.
Not entirely. Yeah, it doesn't actually happen
that
way.
It's a brick balloon.
But you have, exactly, man. Reminds me of my house. But anyway, you have to open up a window, really, to have this be effective. So it's pulling this hot air from the environment, pushing it through a chamber that has these moist padding things inside of it. Depends on, the kind of swamp cooler, right, exactly what form it makes. But pads, moist pads, evaporates the air, evaporates the water, cools the air, and then the cooler air is pushed in through by a fan into the house or whatever. Now, this only works in really dry environments, and the reason for that is that the temperature of the air is going to be different between the regular dry bulb air, which is the temperature of the air as it is, and the wet bulb air, which is the temperature of the air if it were at 100% humidity.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So the greater that difference, the more a swamp cooler will cool a building. So if you're in a very dry spot, let's say Las Vegas, Las Vegas is pretty dry. The difference between the air's temperature at its normal state and the air's temperature if it had 100% humidity will be pretty large.
Yeah.
Then using a swamp cooler means that that difference in temperature will essentially result in a cooling effect that can get a house down to around, say, 72 degrees.
Yeah.
Which is a comfortable temperature for most people. Now, if you were in a very high humid area, like, say, I don't know, Atlanta, Georgia, where the humidity can be 80% or greater, the difference between the dry bulb air, which let's say it's at that 80% humidity, and the wet bulb air, which is at 100% humidity, is small. The difference is not significant, mm-hmm. really. And so you are not going to get a big cooling effect from a swamp cooler. You may just feel like, oh, the hot air in my house is being replaced by slightly less hot air coming from this cooling system.
Right.
That's not more comfortable. It's just not as hot. So swamp coolers can work great if you are in a very dry place, a dry, hot place.
Yeah.
And if you're in a stifling, hot, wet place, like most of the Southeast, most of the Eastern Seaboard, really.
In the United States.
Yeah, in the United States, I should say.
Yeah, there are many other places around the world that would have similar problems.
Yes, this is true. It's not just us. It's just easy for me to talk about because I have a lot of experience on the East Coast of the United States of America.
True.
Swamp coolers are not the best choice for you.
Yeah, there are problems with – I mean, my father told me about someone he knew who tried the – essentially a modernized version of the grass mat technique and – blowing air through your house in a high humidity climate when you've been, pumping water down this, surface.
Yeah.
Basically, you're just adding more humidity and it's closed off, which makes mold and mildew a problem.
Yeah. And it's, there's also the.
Not that there isn't with regular air conditioning.
No, there can be.
My basement is the top floor of my house is, a pretty decently comfortable, but downstairs is like a meat locker.
Yeah.
And we actually run a dehumidifier in the summer because it can get sort of musty down there. So.
Yeah. And really when the air is saturated with water, I mean, we're talking about 100% humidity. When the air is saturated with water, then you're not going to add more water to that system. So that's why the swamp cooler won't be effective at that point. It's also why if you are in the Southeast of the United States and it's a very humid day, you might start sweating, but you don't feel any cooler because the sweat is not really evaporating off your skin. It's just accumulating because the air is already so saturated with moisture that you can't add to it.
Yeah. That makes me feel even warmer.
Right. That's why you will often hear the phrase, it's not the heat, it's the humidity. And then you immediately punch that person in the face.
I was going to say that's usually followed by violence.
I have been punched in the face many times when I've talked to my friends out west. They're like, yeah, well, it's 115 degrees out here in Texas. And I said, well, it's, only 98 degrees here. But, it's not the heat. It's the humidity. In Texas, they like to punch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cattle.
Sometimes I end up.
And sometimes Jonathan.
It's terrible. I mean, it's just blood and barbecue sauce everywhere.
Oh.
It's a horrible thing.
Nice.
Anyway, that's all I have. Do you have anything else you wanted to add before we kind of wrap this up?
Nope.
Cool. Well,
cool.
I did not mean
I
to
see
do
what
that.
You did there.
Yeah, that was totally unintentional. Guys, first of all, Ted, thank you so much for that request. That was great. We had a fantastic discussion. We talked about one of our really cool articles on the site. Like I said, if you guys want to learn more about this, go find How Air Conditioners Work at HowStuffWorks.com because there's a great article on that. And really, this is one of those things that a lot of us take for granted, but it is a pretty cool application of science and technology. I thought it was a really nice topic to tackle, so thanks a lot. If you guys have any suggestions for topics that you would like us to talk about, you can let us know in email. Our address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com, or contact us on Facebook or Twitter, and the handle there is techstuffhsw. Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?